Coach Torrey is recuperating, but still isn't cleared to come into the studio. Should be soon. So we are still in the archives and re-releasing another one of our more popular episodes. The topics are still as relevant today as when they were originally released. Topic 1 today, we talk about catchers backing up first base. Topic 2, more games are lost than won. Topic 3 is let's get rid of saying, my bad.
For whatever reason, catchers and catchers' parents and coaches have a lot more to say and a lot more input or questions or whatever it might be whenever we post something about catching, more so than anything else. So the topic on this blog was, I believe, when there's no one on base, in any situation where there is not the likelihood of a play at home plate, that if there's a ball hit on the infield, that the catcher's job is to get down the line and be in a position to help back up first base.
Torrey, it makes complete sense to me.
Well, you're a catcher.
I caught all my life.
Give me a quick little synopsis. So you're playing catcher. Now, obviously, we're talking baseball.
Yep.
So Don's catching. Ground ball gets hit to the shortstop. What's your job?
My job is to trail and anticipate that there's going to be a mishandled ball at first base. And
right.
To be the one that stops that runner from advancing to second into scoring position, I might add, in the event that something happens there, that we've got a player there.
Right. And so on a percentage of how many throws were made to first base, how many times do you think you actually picked up a ball to back up?
Maybe 2 or 3 out of 100.
Right. So 2 or 3%.
Maybe, right?
Right. Do you think those 2 or 3% add up to being really important if it's the championship game, the bottom of the seventh inning, the go-ahead run, potentially getting into scoring position?
Well, I think that there's no question that if you're going to be a part of a team that expects to win and to move on to championships and to play, you know, deep into the season and have a chance to continue forward, that those type of plays are the difference. That's the difference. So am I willing to run down to first base that 100 times? Absolutely.
Right.
Again, I played on good teams with other people that were making other sacrifices too, and that was just something I was willing to do.
Right. And so let's kind of jump into this, because basically in some of the responses to this blog post, I've been called everything from an idiot to a moron to a terrible coach to the stupidest person that's ever walked the planet. It's abusing my poor catcher and all this stuff. So let's kind of put all this into perspective. First off, for any confusion, if anybody is confused, I'm not saying that other players are not backing up first base. So if a ball gets hit to first base, obviously we would expect our right fielder to be moving to back that play up, just like we would be expecting all the players to have a responsibility on every play.
What else do we have to do?
Right. So the right fielder's job on a ground ball to the third baseman or the shortstop or the second baseman is to haul the bread as fast as she can to get into a position to back up first base also. We also used, if the ball was hit to the third baseman or shortstop, we would have our second baseman break towards first base to be in a position to back up a potential play at first base. Because if the ball gets hit to the shortstop and an error gets made at first base, the shortstop still has plenty of time to cover second base.
Right.
We wanted first base backed up so effectively to keep that runner from advancing on a mishandled ball that we would have at least 2, and in a lot of cases, 3 people moving to back it up.
So, Torrey, as you're describing this, I'm seeing a first baseman stretch out, the ball short hops them, hits them in the thigh, could go towards the catcher, could go towards second base, could go
back to the fence.
Right. Right? Yeah. So you got your right fielder there, you got your second base moving that way, and you got your catcher moving that way.
Right. So no matter how that ball bounces, we're going to have somebody in a position to potentially make a play.
Correct.
So let's say it gets airmailed completely over the first baseman, and now it hits the fence. Well, if it hits a chain link fence, depending upon if it hits a post, if it hits a flat spot, if it hits just right, it could go any direction.
Right.
And so we don't know for sure that no matter where the throw is coming from, that it's going to just slide down the fence and go out to the right fielder where she can back it up. So whether it's mishandled and it bounces off of somebody, whether it's
airmailed,
whether it's fumbled around first base and the base runner runs through it and kicks it someplace, whatever happens, the more people we can have backing this play up, my way of thinking, the better off we're going to be.
I don't understand how there can be another option.
Yeah, I don't understand the other option either, except here's what one of the complaints was. Well, that would make sense if you're a college coach because you're only playing one game a day. But what about our poor catcher who's got to play five or six games and it's, you know, a long haul, it's a marathon?
I want to show well so I get a chance to play in college.
Right.
Personally.
Yeah. If we're thinking that our poor catcher is so out of shape or so unathletic or so weak that she can't do that part of the job, that's not a question of whether it's the right way to play the game. That's a question about whether it's the right player to play that position.
Or we need extra players.
Or we need more than one catcher so that the catcher can do what they're supposed to do on every play. And the reason I wanted us to talk about this is, so we've got the catcher who is 60 feet from first base. We've got a right fielder who's probably 100 feet or 120 feet or 140 feet away from getting behind the throw at first base. Now, the right fielder obviously doesn't have gear on, but how unrealistic is it for us to expect that our right fielder can run 140 feet to get all the way behind a play at first base, but we can't ask our catcher to run 40 feet down the line to be in a position that if the ball bounces off the fence weird or bounces off the first baseman weird, that they'd be in a position to back it up?
They're supposed to be hustling into the dugout after innings. They're supposed to be, it shouldn't be a big deal.
Right. Realistically, we're asking them to stay involved in a play when they've got nothing else to do.
Just stand there and chat
Stand there and cheer.
Chat with the umpire.
Stand there and watch it while it unfolds and hope that nothing goes wrong. I'm having a really hard time understanding how anybody can think that this is like a blasphemous idea to have your catcher actually play catcher.
Yeah. Again, too, whether you're conditioning or whatever you're doing, you go as hard as you can until you're exhausted, and then you let someone else do it. So if you're not able to do these things, then someone else needs to be able to hop in there and give you a break, right?
Right. My question is really a simple one. If this is some sort of blasphemous idea that we're going to be making our poor catcher run 40 or 50 feet after a ball gets hit to potentially back up a play, then why is it every time I watch college softball or I watch high-level travel ball or I watch really good teams play that I see them doing this? For those of you that think it's the craziest thing ever, please feel free, fastpitchprep@gmail.com. everythingfastpitch@gmail.com. Let's have you come on and let's talk about it. And you can explain to us why we're wrong.
Here's the thing too, Tori. And if you're playing five games in a day and you're finishing at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, whatever it might be, again, that's just one of those things that we're going to have to get used to doing.
Right.
Right.
I'll guarantee if your catcher's not backing up first base, you're not playing in the championship game very often.
You're going to lose.
Yeah.
And at some point you're going to lose. Again, that's just one of those things that you just got to do. It's just how it is.
Other thing that I just thought was frustrating about the responses was that it's almost like excuse making for our poor catcher that we're asking them to do too much.
So
in the blog, we talk about it. I know the catcher's got a tough job. They're doing a lot.
Yeah.
But if you want to do it well, let's learn to do it well.
If you get used to turning it on and off to where, okay, well, today's a long day. I'm not going to back up first base. Or, it's the fourth game. I don't think I'm going to back up first base. All of a sudden, you're going to go, holy cow, this is the championship game, and I didn't back up first base. And now we've got a runner on second that a single from the next batter scores.
Is the winning run of the game.
And it's the winning run of the game. Rather than I backed up first base, they're on first base, and the next hitter comes up and hits a single into the outfield. Now we got runners on first and second or second and third, and the pitcher strikes out the side.
Right.
We win the game.
Yeah.
That's just the difference.
Right.
Which one do you want to be on? It doesn't matter.
Yeah. And the thing that I've noticed a lot now that a lot of teams are doing is kind of as a reward for their catchers for hustling down the line, they then include them in the around the horn. So you'll see the first baseman, when she does make the play,
gets the flip
and flips the ball to the catcher, and the catcher throws it around, and they all celebrate the fact that everybody did their job.
Right. And it looks sharp.
And we know for sure that we're doing the things that we need to do to play the game and do all the things that we need to do to be a successful team. So coaches, your catchers need to get involved. They need to be doing their job. And part of their job is backing up first base, just like it's the right fielder's job to back up first base, just like it's the left fielder's job to back up third base, just like it's the shortstop's job to go to cover second base. The logic about catcher not backing up first base, I was thinking about this. Here's some other analogies. Well, we're not going to make our shortstop cover second when they might steal because she's going to get too tired. We're not going to make our third baseman charge bunts because she might not bunt it. So we don't want our third baseman to get too tired.
We're going to let our kids walk in between.
Yeah, we're not going to expect our outfielders to back each other up because they're going to get too tired.
They're going to adapt. You're going to get into good enough shape to be able to do it,
right,
if it's expected.
Right. And Don, you mentioned something before we even started recording. If you're a catcher and you want to catch the eye of a college coach who's dying to recruit a catcher, if I'm watching a game as a recruiter and I watch two kids that are equally talented and one kid is a lazy bump who's standing behind home plate watching the game and another one who's hauling her butt down the line and backing up first base every time, though she might never touch a backup.
No brainer.
It's absolutely a no brainer because, yeah, I know for sure that any college coach that aspirations of being successful is going to want all their players to play hard all the time. I hope we've beat this horse to death. Come on, people. Let us know if you think we're wrong. I'm not afraid to have this discussion. If you can convince me I'm wrong, we'll go to it.
I don't mind playing against those that don't want to do it. Even in a situation where we've got a runner on first base. I mean, we're trying to talk about just when nobody's on base that the catcher's responsibility is to go down there. But even with a runner on first base, if we've got a nice sharply hit ground ball in the infield and we've got our middle infielders trying to turn two, that's a situation where a catcher should be, you know, almost shuffling their way down towards first base.
Right.
If the out is made at second base, then they go full speed and they shuffle in the beginning because there's a potential that, you know, the ball might get kicked away or something might happen at second where the out's not made.
Right.
Then the catcher's responsibility needs to get back, you know, home plate.
Right. That's a good point, Don, because I think even in runners, that situation where we might be turning a double play throw, that second throw in a double play is even that much more likely to be
challenging.
Maybe that does get thrown away. And again, you know, if we're in that position, and if you want to, you can even take it to that next level. I've seen teams that run all kinds of crazy pickoff plays because the catcher is so used to coming down behind the backup that all of a sudden the catcher sneaks in behind a base runner, covers the base.
Because first base is
walking away. Right, the first baseman pretending like there's nothing going on. So that base runner takes a little bit of an extra step or two lead, you know, being a little bit cocky because there's nobody covering first base. And all of a sudden, bing, bang, boom, the catcher snuck in there. So if we're going to try to do any of that kind of fun stuff.
If you're standing at home plate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty tough pickoff play to pick her off from 60 feet away.
Right.
And if we never run down there and all of a sudden we run down there once, pretty sure even I would figure out that something might be going on.
And here's the thing, no offense to anybody either that chooses not to have their catchers go that way. It's just a matter of coaching your kids, let them know what your expectations are, and having a plan.
Right.
Right.
And I'm going to say offense to anybody that doesn't have their catchers do it.
You might not be doing it our way, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of times in this game that I can understand, you know, that there's different ways to accomplish different things.
Sure.
This is not one of them. This is not one of them. This is just, I don't want my catcher to have to work that hard. If it's your kid and you want her to be fresh to do something else, then let her be a right fielder. And then see how fresh she is running 120 feet to back up first base instead of 40 feet.
But they don't have the gear on, Tori.
Yeah, I know. Listening to that, I would think back to you know, those days when you first started catching and they gave you the catching gear from some kid that was like 9 years older than you that didn't fit.
It was floppy all over me.
Yeah, none of these kids are wearing gear that doesn't fit them.
Oh, I know. That's pretty nice, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. More games are lost than won.
No, I think that's a very true statement too, Tori. I know a lot of times, you know, really good teams have a tendency to try and play not to lose instead of just going out there and playing to win. And when we get in that situation where we're trying to not lose.
Yeah, trying to not make mistakes.
Yeah. So rather than just going out there and playing, and you know, that's the great teams get that point when they turn it on and just go. Good teams, you know, they get a little bit nervous. They're playing somebody that maybe they don't expect to beat, and they're up on them. And when they do that and try and get a little bit hesitant or tender about it, then they start giving games away that they likely could have cruised through and won.
Right. Well, one thing I thought about, and this was something that I've been thinking about for a long time, but this weekend really made me ponder on it a little bit more on the ride home. I've been doing this for a really long time. And I was trying to think back to numbers of times in my life that I've left the ballpark when we lost a game going, man, we played good. They played good. They just beat us today.
Sure.
Wow, we played great. They played great. They just played a little bit better. They just got the big hit. You know, the number of times that I've thought that is probably less than a handful. When you play a great game and you lose, you can, you know, kind of look at the fact that, well, hey, at least we played great. You know, we just ran into a buzzsaw today. We ran into a team that was just a little bit better than us. But what made me really think about this topic was the fact that that means in probably 10,000 games, I've walked away from it thinking either we screwed up and that's why we lost, or they screwed up and that's why we won. And looking at the game at all different levels, you know, certainly at the college level, I think that that was true, because I'm including, you know, the couple thousand college games where, you know, that I still never felt like it was that thing where both teams could walk away from it going, wow, we played great, we just lost. But watching across the age groups now, and especially with the younger players, the number of times that it happens that one team can walk away from it. I mean, and obviously you're always excited when you win, but we won a couple of games this weekend that were just ugly, you know, ugly games where we didn't play great, but we didn't play as badly as the team that we beat.
Well, I was going to say, we get kids come in and I'll ask them, you know, how things are going, what kind of stories can they tell me, that type of thing. And I can't tell you how many times they say, well, we were beating this team and then, right? And then the wheels fell off and we made some errors, or, and then, you know, we just couldn't get that one big hit, or, and then, so I think you're right on it. Yeah. That's good.
And so what we wanted to talk about then is for our listeners is to start to think about if you look back at your own experience with this game and how many times you walk away from the ballpark going, oh man, we gave that one away. Oh man, I can't believe we played that way. I can't believe we made those mistakes, and start to understand that it's up to us now, whether it's as coaches, parents, or players, to take that knowledge and do something with it. Number one, really raise our awareness of what's going on in the game. And this is, to me, the biggest thing. One of the things that is so shocking to me is how little awareness there is of score and inning and in travel ball time limit. You know, the game's going to end at some point in time. And if it's the last inning, we had a game not too long ago where we were down by 5 runs going into the last inning, 4 runs, 5 runs, whatever it was. We end up with the bases loaded and the opposing team comes in and squeezes all their infielders in to make plays at the plate when they had a 4-run lead.
I maybe just trying to practice that.
But for whatever their logic was, you know, because they wanted to make sure they won by 5, or did they really want to win?
Right.
Well, what ended up happening then is a blooper to where the shortstop should have been, a 3-hopper up the middle that the shortstop would have probably been able to turn a double play on, a little flare to right field, and all of a sudden we're winning a game on 3 balls that if they'd played a more logical defense for the situation would have been easy out.
Just to get it done.
Right. Yeah. And that kind of thing. So number one is we want to make sure that we're spending more time being aware and trying to gain knowledge and awareness of that specific topic, the score, the inning, the situation, so that we're starting to play the game logically, thinking about what's going on right now. If it's the first inning and we want to try to cut down a run, or if it's, you know, the tying run and we want to try to cut down a run, that's a certain kind of situation. But when we're ahead by a lot,
late in the game, yep,
that we're starting to understand that, you know, giving up a run to get an out in a lot of situations is a really big thing.
It's a good swap. Yeah. No, I was just thinking, trying to be protective of them and their choices, saying that maybe they're just working on something.
Yeah, no,
you're
always trying to be nice. Everybody's figured out that Don's the good cop in the discussions. But knowing the situation and making better decisions. If the only person who really cares about if that run scores is the pitcher's dad,
right,
or the pitcher's mom. Everybody else should be excited about the fact that we get a run or give up a run to get an out, and
to
now
win the game,
right?
Yeah.
And so now they need to get 2 or 3 or 4 more hits,
yeah,
to win the game. And instead of that, because we're trying so hard to keep them from getting a run, that we give up 4 or 5 runs and lose a game.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Right. And yeah. So my question is, you know, the logic I get of trying to cut down runs in certain situations is going to be applicable. But in that situation, you know, if we're that worried about giving up a run.
So you would trade a run for an out.
Yeah, but we're so worried about not giving up a run that we give up 5 runs. So how do you think the pitcher's mom and dad feel about her ERA now? Because we just turned three bloopers into a five-run rally.
Into big hits.
Yeah, instead of, you know, getting a ground ball, getting a runner at second, getting a runner at third, getting an out at first, whatever it is. We want to make sure that we start to be the team that wins games instead of the team that loses games, that we're going to start to think about the score of the situation and the time limit, all that kind of stuff for where we're at in the game.
They had a hunch they were going to start bunting, Torrey.
Second thing is base running. We've got to, again, be aware of the score and the situation. This one happened in our game yesterday where we were down by four. We have one out. We've got two runs in already. The girl coming to third. Play gets made over at first base. The ball gets away from the first baseman, but it's like 3 feet away from her. While I'm yelling, stay here, stay here, stay here, stay here, she saw the ball roll away from the first baseman and ended up getting thrown out.
She took some initiative.
Yeah, she was trying to be aggressive, and aggressive is sometimes a good thing. But again, if we know the score and the situation, we look at it and say,
make a better choice.
The risk isn't worth the potential reward. Even if she scores, we're still down a run.
Yep.
And if she makes an out, it totally destroys the potential rally that we have going. So we're already, you know, back in the game.
Kind of want to push those runs across.
Right. And we've got a couple of really good hitters coming up, you know, if we can just keep the rally going. So when we talk about being aware of the situation, base runners, we've got to know the score. We've got to know the number of outs. We've got to know those kinds of situations. We have to be thinking that through. You know, we talked a couple weeks ago about, you know, some of these big, gigantic rallies that we've been a part of and coming back from six or seven runs down. Well, a big part of that is making sure that you don't
make little mistakes.
Make those little mistakes. Does it make a difference? I don't know. The next girl hit a screaming line drive at the third baseman, which might have been a double play anyhow.
Yeah.
But
it might have been down in the corner.
Right. And it might have been rolling around in the corner. We would have won the game.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's just one of those things that I think when we talk about games being lost versus games being won, you know, base running is another area. We had another situation in a game where the other team was rallying against us. And girl made a big turn on a play at third base. I don't know if there was some miscommunication between her and the third base coach, but we ended up being able to pick her off.
Popped it in behind her.
Yeah, and get an out in a situation where I think that was maybe the first out of the inning when they were rallying. So just making sure that if we want to be on the right side of this discussion, we've got to make sure that we clean up the base running. Obviously, the mental mistakes, the third thing on my list. We've got to make sure that we're thinking through all the possibilities so that we're the team that is covering the right bases, that is making the right plays. You know, again, if we're the team that's trying to protect the lead, are we making sure that everybody's on the same page so that if a ground ball gets hit to the shortstop, she knows she should be going to two or going to one and that everybody's doing their job.
And there's someone will be there.
Right. Yeah. Instead of the ball gets hit to the shortstop and we think, well, she's going home and all of a sudden she goes to throw it to second and the second baseman's not in her position.
Yeah. And that little hesitation.
Right. Again, the rally is born there. Other one that I saw, which was, again, the assumption that something's going to happen, is a ground ball to the shortstop. Looks like it's going to be a routine play. Takes a crazy hop and goes over her head. And the left fielder is basically still standing in left field watching the shortstop make the play.
Snoozing
and losing, because then all of a sudden the ball takes that crazy hop and is rolling around out on the warning track on a ball that could have been an out, but should have never been more than a single.
Flat-footed is never good, Torrey.
Right. So back to the original idea of this leadoff topic is that more games are lost than won. There's some things that we need to start to really do a better job of as coaches, parents, and players, making sure that our kids understand it. There's a time when aggressive, everybody knows from listening to this podcast, I think aggressive is almost always good.
You are always on the aggressive side.
The flip side is also being aware enough or conscious enough of what's going on in the game to be able to turn that aggressiveness down a little bit.
You cover that, though, with communication.
Right.
Right? And that's what you're getting at, is making sure that we communicate with the kids, that the kids communicate with each other about the situation, the score, the outs, what's next, right?
Well, and a perfect example, we have runners at first and third. The runner at first base for our team has yet to be thrown out stealing a base.
So she's quick.
I've never seen her thrown out. We have a runner at third in a game that we're down by two runs. So I tell the runner at third, step off this bag.
The important one's on first base.
Don't even step off this bag, because you know the only one that matters is stealing second base right now.
Until she pushes you home.
And then the runner's going from second. I take a peek up, and all of a sudden I look, and the runner's three steps off of third. They snap, throw behind her, and get her
no.
up.
No.
And it's just those kinds of things. And so, you know, I think one of the things that we have to, you know, make sure of, and to me, I was frustrated in myself because even though I had just said it, yeah. I probably should have been standing right there, you know, stay on the bag, don't move, don't move. But because I lost my focus for a split second, you know, she went back to, well, they're never going to throw it down here. I'm going to try to sneak in if they do kind of thing, and ended up costing us a potential rally. Now,
they knew they weren't going to get that other girl either.
Right. Now, yeah. as crazy as it was, we ended up winning that game on an error in the bottom of the whatever
on
inning.
On their end.
On their end, where they made a bigger mistake than we made.
There you go.
But it's just one of those things that, you know, to me, playing in a game where you're the, that show they had on TV, The Biggest Loser. It was a weight loss show where they had the competition. Well, I don't want us to be the softball version of we get to win because we're not the biggest loser.
Right.
You know, I'd like us to win because we're worthy of winning, not because we just played less poorly than the other team.
Sure. Yep.
Hopefully, people, we can take a step in the right direction, make sure that we're thinking a little bit more logically and clearly about how to be the team that wins versus the team that loses.
Assess the situation, communicate, and then execute. Right?
And execute, and make sure that we keep communicating, keep talking. And as I learned a very valuable lesson, just because you said it 20 seconds ago doesn't mean that the kids are going to remember. It
doesn't still count.
Yeah, you know, the 20-second rule definitely can lead to them having forgotten it, confusing themselves or whatever it is.
And it's almost weird when you're base coaching and you just repetitively are saying it. But again, people get distracted and excited. And
And I understand they get excited. I mean, they're 12 years old. But anyhow, so we ought to work on that. Last golden oldie is our coaching tip of the week. I wanted us to talk about something that really is one of my pet peeves. And all I've got a bunch of them. Every week we're talking about something else that's a pet peeve. But I hate the, my bad. You know, you and I are throwing. I throw the ball over your head. Oh, my bad. While you chase after it.
It's over.
And then
it's done.
Two more throws go by. And then I throw another one. Oh, no, sorry, Don. My bad. The reason I want us to talk about it is because I think that the idea of apologizing, of just saying you're sorry, just saying my bad, is one of those things that we've got kids so conditioned to say it that it doesn't really have any meaning to them anymore. They're just saying it as a reflex, not as a sincere feeling for what's going on.
So don't mind bad me, do 10 push-ups.
Well, and I heard this at a clinic several years ago, and I think that this is what I've always, since that day, tried to instill in our teams. Instead of saying my bad, say I'll fix it. Take responsibility for the fact that you just screwed up. Because I think why my feelings about it are as strong as they are is because I don't believe most kids who say it really are sorry. I think they're just saying it.
I think when I moved here, that was the replacement for I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to make a bad throw.
Right. And either one.
So
either
I thought it was a Southern thing. But.
Right. Either I'm sorry or my bad. Either way, I think that it's deflecting responsibility instead of accepting responsibility. I make a bad throw and I look you in the eye and say, Don, I'll fix that. I'll do better next time. I think you have more confidence in the fact that I mean it and that I might really try to do something to make a better effort the next time than if I just throw you another my bad or I'm sorry.
So we'll find out on your next throw, Tori.
Right. But I think that just changing our attitude as coaches, you know, we tell it all, I tell players this all the time. Don't say I'm sorry. Don't apologize. You know, if you want to apologize, apologize because your attitude is bad. Apologize because you're not trying hard. But don't apologize for making a mistake that's in the everyday.
When you're trying.
Yeah.
Repetitive.
Yeah, that's in the everyday part of playing the game. Take responsibility for it. And then also kind of taking it to the next level. I saw a thing about the Blue Angels, you know, the precision flying team.
Yeah.
And on the Blue Angels, they do a post-flight analysis of every flight that they do. And I saw a video of them sitting around a conference room table, and they basically have a play-by-play sheet of everything that happened from the minute they walk out of the locker room until the minute they walk in the locker room. It was to the point of, as they're walking out, you know, one of the pilots said, I notice I'm a quarter of a step out of sync with the other two of you as we were marching out. I can correct that. I'll fix that.
No, I know. That's one of those or else things.
Right.
It could be.
And so then it just keeps going as they're going further in. And all of a sudden, like, I was a quarter beat off on my turn, but I'll correct that. And I think that, you know, when you see it in that setting, you know, as you mentioned, Don, that's life and death. If you and I are flying 6 feet apart and I'm a little bit late turning and you turn when you're supposed to, we might both end up dead. And so, you know, at that level, they've decided that, you know, apologizing doesn't cut it. You know, they've got to make up their mind that they're going to commit to correcting it. And when you look at something that's that precise and that fast paced, that if they're willing to admit, okay, I screwed up, I can fix it, is a whole lot different than just, you know, trying to say, I'm sorry. And so that's the first one that I want us to start to instill in our players. Coaches, I want you to take the initiative on this. Don't let them get away with saying my bad. Make them say, I'll fix it. Make them take responsibility for it. And then players on board with the idea, and they'll start to see that they've been saying my bad, or they've been saying I'm sorry without any real consequences attached to it.
So then you're making me think about movies here, Tori. What was that movie with Tom Cruise?
Top Gun?
Top Gun, there you go.
Well, there's supposed to be Top Gun 2 coming out one of these days, but I know you haven't seen any of them, so...
I need to get busy with the movies,
yeah,
right?
Netflix, Don, it's a thing. Okay, Netflix, Prime Video...
Hulu,
all those, you know, they have things on them. They're called movies. You know, they're like entertaining things that, you know,
like
last
lifetime,
an hour or so.
Lifetime
hour
things,
yeah,
that
like
people share.
Yeah, real stuff. You know, and people actually watch it for like entertainment. And then the other one that I want players to stop saying is I'll try. Because trying to me is the ultimate excuse. And all you have to do is think about it, you know, from a different perspective.
You got
to
get her done.
Yeah, you know, Yoda says there is no try, you know, only do. Mr. Miyagi says, you know, don't try, do. You know, if you do your best, I'll be happy with whatever happens. If you try, I think you're already building in an excuse.
A but.
And
I tried.
Yeah. And real world example I use all the time is every one of us has been invited to do something that we don't really want to do. Don, I got a big Christmas party coming up. It'll be great. It's, you know, 25 people you really don't like, but I want you to come because it's a Christmas party. Can you come?
Sure.
Or?
Because it's you, Tori.
Yeah. Or you're going to say, well, I'll try to get there.
You're not coming.
Yeah, I'll try. Don, I'll try to get there. Well, you know.
You're not coming.
Yeah, but we know when somebody says, I'll try to be there, that they're really probably not going to be there because
if they try.
Yeah. If they meant it, they'd say, I'll be there. If
Done.
They say, I'll try, it means they're already building in an excuse for why they're not going to come. And I think that that's true for what our softball players are doing. We say, well, Don, I need you to bring your throw down as, you know, when you're throwing to second. I'll try. Well, no, I don't want you to try to do it. I want you to do it. Well, but I'll try. No, I don't want you to try because you've been trying, and how's that working out? The reason I'm after you.
You're obviously trying.
Yeah, the reason I'm after you is because your trying isn't getting it done. I need you to get your throw down on your throw to second base on a steal. I'll do it. And amazingly,
yes, sir,
when you
I
make up
coach,
your mind
yeah.
to do it, you do better at it. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to be perfect, but it's a whole lot better than trying.
Are we trying harder?
Right. And for parents, you know, you've heard this a million times. Well, Don, why did you get picked off in the third inning?
I'm trying
to do the best I can. I'm trying. Well, yeah, how's that working out? Keep trying and keep getting thrown out, or start doing a better job and do a better job.
So I'll do a better job, so, coach.
So that's the one I wanted us to talk about. So coaches, parents, players, my bad, I'm sorry, I'll try. Those got to go away.
Get her done.
Yeah, let's replace them with, I can fix that, I'll fix that.
I will.
I will, and I can do that. I will do a better job.